Hello, Rat, you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Steve, how are you?
Yeah, it's Blacknell calling. How are you doing? How you been? All right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sort of been mostly enjoying the lockdown, really.
Enjoying it, really?
Well, I'm very lucky because I'm not as affected by it as most other musicians because most of mine is studio work and writing things. So I haven't had the rug pulled from under me like most of the country has. So I'm feeling very sort of privileged.
But before all this, were you still out there gigging a lot and all that stuff?
No, not so much. You know, I do kind of odd live things, but it's to be honest, it's so time consuming. And so much hard work, and I don't get asked to do that much these days either. So, you know, I'm sort of known for doing my studio thing now. So that's a lot of what I do.
Yeah, I haven't seen you. It's funny music, isn't it? It's a weird thing. I haven't seen you in probably I don't know how many years, and yet it's still for some reason just keeps you together. I remember. Probably the last time I saw you was in the 80s when I interviewed the Damned, I think. We did something at the Marquee many, many moons ago. But music's a weird thing. So looking back, I mean, how do you view those days? I mean, I remember you, we all did, you know, you were the wild man of rock, you were sort of like, and all this and all that. How do you view all that now?
Well, I view it as sort of three different stages of Rat, really. You've got like
stages of Rat. Yeah.
There's the sort of first years of Damn, Damn, Damn with Brian and everything when it really was a lot of fun. You know what I mean? It was, you know, you were there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it wasn't always fun, but it was fun when you made it back into the Roxy with your mates and you could kind of watch bands and suddenly you were surrounded by people that were on the same page as you in sort of a lot of difference in every sense, really. And then you go outside the Roxy and it was back in the real world and getting chased by Teddy Boys and searched by the police, you know.
That was phase one of Rat.
That was phase one. Then you had phase two, which was the, wow, I can roll a joint. Let's listen to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and start listening to Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was very good for me because, you know, I'm not a very good drunk. So that kind of replacement deal sort of, it helps in a lot of ways, I think, that are highly illegal, but they did help. Yeah. And then there was stage three, which was the pretty years, you know, with lots of hairstyle and Phantasmagoria and Eloise and all of that sort of commercial success that I suppose we'd always wanted, really.
Yeah, I don't know how it sat with the Damned on Top of the Pops.
Well, the BBC and punk rock were very strange bedfellows, really. Cause
they were.
Because the first time we did anything BBC was the John Peel show. And I remember the engineer walked out on the grounds that we had amplifiers 6 feet high. And all day long while we were doing the session, there was just a constant stream of BBC employees coming into the control room and kind of staring at us through a window. You know, it was a bit like being Guy the Gorilla, I think. It was, and they wouldn't let us eat in the canteen while anybody else was in there. It was lunchtime and they made us wait until sort of 3 o'clock or something when everyone else had gone and it was safe for us to sit there on our own and eat our shepherd's pie or whatever it was. Well, Do you know what I mean?
So, well, once a punk, always a punk, I suppose.
Well, but, you know, and then over the years, of course, we didn't go away. And then suddenly we did make the Top of the Pops thing. You know, we carried on doing radio stuff. And then I suppose the BBC just got used to us being there. You know, not just the Damned, but I mean that sort of punk thing. They realised that it was something that was there and it wasn't going to go away, you know, readily.
Well, I remember with Eloise, you would, I mean, if you'd talk to when Neat, Neat, Neat and all those things came out, if you'd talk to a punk band at the time about doing a cover, it would have been probably not, but I mean, there was an acceptance perhaps, you know, when the Damned did Eloise and all that stuff, and a darn good cover as well. It seemed perhaps punk had come of age in some sort of way.
Do you know, the interesting thing was that, first of all, we never minded doing a cover. In a way, because we did Help was the B-side of New Rose, I think.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, and I really like the way that Brian sort of changed it and made it really sort of manic and strange, you know, and sort of fast, and it sounded quite psychotic with a new interpretation of it. And I was reading our very first interview in Sniffing Glue.
And, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And Dave Vanian actually says, you know, well, we don't want to just be a punk band. You know, one day I'd like to cover Eloise. And he actually was saying that in 1976. So it wasn't a new idea. It was just that we sort of took us a while to get round to it.
Well, yeah, so you sort of proved me wrong in a nice sort of way. I just wonder, it's funny the way the public see people. I just wonder what back in those days, what a punk would do all day. Would the punk go shopping? Would the, because it would, it was such, it was such a shock to us all, wasn't it? I mean, particularly to me in the music business, I was just a record plugger, you know, and all that stuff. And when it all came about, it really shocked us all. So what was life like day to day then for you?
It was, I don't know. It was, I'm just trying to cast it back. I mean, you'd always get a hard time off someone, like the store detective would always, you know, you'd always have someone from security following you around the supermarket.
Right. Yeah, sure.
And you'd get a lot of comments and passing things, you know, as people would past you and stuff like that. And then, but one of the things about it that was actually enjoyable was the sort of drop dead reaction that a lot of sort of what you'd call normal people would have to us walking down the road with Barnets and leather jackets, and they really hadn't seen anything like it, and they would just sort of freeze in their tracks and just sort of blatantly stare at you as you went down the road. And that was part of the joy of being a punk, was knowing.
Yeah,
that
I mean, I had a bit of that in America when I had my red hair and all my eye makeup and stuff, looking a bit like Dusty Springfield on acid. And when I was out there in Connecticut and Westport with bands, they'd look at you like you were Mickey Mouse. And it was like a bit like that with the punks, I think. No one had seen it before, had they really?
I mean, when we did the Machine Gun Etiquette cover, I mean, we actually went into Times Square and photographed that, and there really was, in before we could finish crossing the road and getting the first pictures taken, there was a crowd of about 200 people that just gathered, and the police were starting to arrive, so we had to move on. You know, it was amazing. I mean, really, think about, you know, all you had to do was step outside the front door and everybody would just kind of go, what is happening? What's going on here? You know, who are these people? And it was sort of throwing it back in the face of, if you like, normal society. It was, listen, you know, you've left us with nothing. And so this is what we've done with it. We've made a bin liner and a pair of jeans.
That's about it, isn't it? So,
yeah.
But you see, we obviously still have the same name because that is your name. But so do you feel you've... I don't know. I don't feel. What am I? I'm 68, nearly 68. You're a bit younger, I think. A couple of years, are you? Or whatever.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, just a little bit. But, you know, I mean, I don't know if I've matured. Do you feel like you've matured as a person, or do you still feel like a kid who wants to go and get behind the sticks or whatever? Just do music.
I think you learn a bit more about consequence as you get older.
Mm.
And you think, I may feel like nicking that bottle of vodka, but I've done this before, and I know the ending to that story.
Yes,
you know, it's really good. So I think as you get older, you do kind of figure things out. But I don't think it changes. I don't think I've changed a lot of my attitudes towards the way the world's run and what I think is right and what's wrong and what's fair and what isn't. You know, it's kind of...
Oh, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Well, I mean, have you?
Well, no, I just feel this the same. I just feel, to be honest, that every day is a little adventure. And if an opportunity comes up, I'll take it. I mean, some people say, are you still working at 67? I always just say, I haven't really started yet. I still look forward to that phone call, that what it ever could be in my world, the same as yours, you know. So I still get excited, you know, still get excited.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's everything. That sense of optimism is really vital, especially as you get older. You know, I still think that one day I'm going to make it in show business, you know.
So you still, no, really, so there's always the big mountain to, well, not the mountain to climb, there's always something higher up,
yeah,
and stuff.
I did a West End musical with Jane Horrocks, which was, you know, a totally...
I didn't know, when was that?
A couple of years ago now, but it was... It was all her favourite songs that she grew up with, you know, being a sort of northern lass.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of Fool tracks and Morrissey. And, of course, you know, a lot of the time I never really got into any of that or heard it because we were sort of too busy being from London and not on the road and not interested in anyone else apart from your own career, you know. That was the sort of so I really, and, you know, the same thing when I did Donovan. I played with him the first time he'd been out with a band. And it was a really... I really enjoyed the challenge of, you know, having to play quietly and learn new tunes and, you know, listen to the stories of people that have been doing it for a lot longer than I have. And
well, that's so intriguing, isn't it? You wouldn't put someone with your moniker as working with, let alone Donovan, Jane Horrocks. I mean, that's nearly a trivia question.
They tried to find someone cheaper, but couldn't.
But they couldn't. But you're not just drumming, so you're making more new music and stuff.
Yeah, I'm doing sort of a fair amount of producing and things like that now. You know, I've just done a couple of remixes. One that very poignantly, which is a tune with Lemmy singing, covering a Metallica song called Nothing Else Matters, which I've just really enjoyed doing, actually. But it's very poignant because, you know, poor old Lemmy, you know, you can hear he's kind of he wasn't as young as he was when he put it down, and that emotion thing. So it's a bit like, you know, that miserable Johnny Cash album. That's a brilliant record, but God, you know, it's like, it just makes you so sad when you listen to it.
Talking of Lemmy, were you close? I mean, I wasn't close, but I've interviewed him a trillion times, but were you good mates?
Well, yeah. I think we were close enough to be frank with each other about, with opinions and what we should do. And I hung out with him enough to realise that you never ever saw him drunk or falling over. I don't know how he did it. He was always, you know, and I mean, I'd be with him and he'd just keep on drinking, you know, Jack and Coke, Jack and Gold,
yep.
You know, and he'd just stay there. And then build a model aeroplane or something, you know.
I remember him asking me for a drink once, and he said, I've given up drinking. And I got there, and he had 2 bottles of White Lightning cider and 3 gins.
Yeah.
And I said, but I thought you'd have given up drinking. He said, I have. This is just cider and gin. He said, this is tea, I remember. And he just was like a machine. But what he left behind was incredible, wasn't it? Just even just the quotes, but... Big hole. There's a big hole where, you know, where we once stood.
Really, yeah.
Bless him.
I think, and the funny thing, it's a bit like Iggy Pop as well, isn't it? You know, it's kind of, you got Lemmy and Iggy, and at the time when they first kind of arrived and started doing things, they really weren't tagged for any kind of success at all.
Yeah.
Even in their own minds, they'd say, listen, you know, I'm never going to be a rock star. Or I'm just glad I've got this gig, kind of, you know, and. They were doing it because they loved it. And I think that's the real point, is that when you really do believe in it and you put a band together or make music for a sort of genuine, heartfelt reason, then you'd always get a much better end result rather than trying to make a career move, you know?
I think you're right. And still one of my favourite quotes ever. There are many Lemmy quotes, but my doctor says I can have 2 drinks a day. I'm up to the year 2045 at the moment. And just eloquence, you know, sheer eloquence. But anyway, but you're happy and you're good and you're healthy and bouncing, yeah?
Yeah, well, I'm upright and breathing, which, you know, to be honest, is a surprise, but I didn't expect to make it to 30, let alone 65.
I'm sure not. So you got new projects and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm doing a thing with a friend of mine, Billy Shinbone. We've got an album out at the moment under the album's called Sparkle and the band's called The Sinclairs.
Right.
So we've been doing a lot of sort of fun stuff with that because we don't really want to take it on the road. Well, of course, we haven't been able to do anything like that anyway.
Yeah.
So we sort of decided that we'd go in and, you know, shooting videos on iPhones and just sort of doing that. And It's kind of really interesting the way technology is at the moment, because we put three kind of proper videos together, and we did a live set of three songs for the Rebellion Festival, which they're going to be broadcasting in a couple of weeks, I think, to make up for the cancellation. But I mean, we've done all of that for less than 500 quid in sort of petrol money.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah,
it's a brilliant world, you know. And
the world has shrunk, hasn't it? It's shrunk.
Well, you think of what it used to cost to shoot a video. You were talking tens of thousands and a catering truck.
But, that's right, yeah, the makeup lady and a runner and all that stuff. It's crazy, isn't it? So,
and it's the same as recording, you know. Now you can have a complete studio, well, like we all do, you know, you have a complete recording studio on your laptop. And you can carry it around. And the days of, I remember going into a studio and waiting an hour while they lined up the tape heads, and then the reel of tape had run out, or it depended what speed you were running at, or you had to, and you know, you had to play the whole song for 3.5-4 minutes.
That's right.
You couldn't duck out anywhere.
No. The world, I thought Spotify was an acne cream. You know, it's all gone. Listen, I've reversed the charge, by the way, if you don't mind. And hopefully, when all this is done and dusted, perhaps we can have that legendary beer.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's on you, though.
Oh, done deal. All right, Rap.
All right.
See you soon, mate. God bless.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Bye. Bye.